Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Richard Osborne and the Expert Language Trainer Podcast. Hi everyone, this is Richard Osborne and this is episode 7 of the Expert Language Trainer Podcast. In this episode, I want to focus really on the digital side of language training today. I feel like this is something where there's a lot of information out there and there's a lot of sharing going on. And so I want to contribute, I suppose, in my own way, and also to do a bit of a summary of what's going on in the digital world at the moment, what I see going on in the digital world and how I see the opportunities that are there, to try to give you an idea of what you can be doing to take advantage of that and not be left behind. Because there's a lot moving, there's a lot changing. So let's get right into it. To start off with, I am a big fat liar. I am a big fat liar because I just recorded about 5 minutes of a podcast there, of the same podcast, and something happened with my phone. I don't know what I did. I bugged the phone and it cut me off. So I thought, right, I'll start again. And in that 5 minutes, I'd just been talking about how much I've been looking out there at what's going on Instagram, on YouTube in particular, with digital language trainers and how they're monetizing their offer, and that's great, but they're not getting into that spirit of teaching that we still have, most of us, which is sharing classroom techniques with our colleagues, trying to help our colleagues to be better teachers without thinking, you know, they're going to come in and take my clients away from me or something like that, you know, sharing activities and materials with them, you know, in that altruistic way without any thought of whether that's going to come back to haunt us one day when we lose a bit of revenue as a result. You know, we're just helping because we like helping our colleagues and we've always liked helping our colleagues. So I was saying that, and then, you know, for digital, saying that people are not helping as much as, you know, we did back in the days when I was teaching in Paris in my language school and I was studying for the Delta. And there were a lot of new teaching methodologies coming up and activity ideas and approaches and whatever that I wanted to share with my colleagues. The first thing I thought was, right, I'm going to start organizing a weekly Friday night meeting where we're going to have a few glasses of wine and we're all going to share some new activity that we've been doing that week or something that really worked that week or something that didn't work, talking about why it didn't work, getting some support. You know, that's just, for me, that was a natural thing. I think because you sense in yourself how much, even if you think you're an expert language trainer, as an expert language trainer, you know that you're always growing and you're always learning and you're never perfect. You're never finished with your process of professional development, never. And so you feel that in yourself. You look at your colleagues and you think we're all in the same boat. So let's all help each other out. Let's all help each other grow because we're all trying to do the same thing. There's no point, you know, you doing it alone in your own corner, you might improve, but doing it with colleagues, you're always going to improve faster. So, you know, that's great. And I did that for classroom activities. When it comes to online stuff, in those days, I didn't really look at that much with my colleagues. And for, you know, today, when you're looking at the people who are really crushing it online, like the people I've been mentioning on my LinkedIn page as expert language trainers of the day, a lot of them have their own online offers. And that's one thing that really impresses me. And that's why I put them up there, because I want to promote them a bit and show other trainers what they're doing. Also to, you know, they're not going to go out and write a guide necessarily about how to do better in your, you know, online language training, because, you know, they're monetizing something that they're putting out on the internet, so it's very easy for someone to copy what they're doing and to put out their own content and to compete with someone else, because, like I've been saying, there are no quality certifications or yardsticks that we can use to say, oh well, this trainer is clearly better with their online offer because they have X qualification and the other trainer doesn't. Like, that just doesn't exist. But there are, I mean, you know, that's why I say I'm a big fat liar, because actually there are a lot of trainers out there, when I took 2 seconds to think about it, which I sometimes don't, there are a lot of teachers out there who are actually sharing their expertise with people. There was one teacher the other day who really impressed me, and that was Lindsay Williams. You can go check on my activity. That was one post I put up, or I'll put a link to her in the podcast description. She, you know, I found her because I was actually preparing to do a webinar on Skype training on how to do better video call training, video conference training. And she was the top result when you look on Google for language training on Skype. She had a guide called 12 Top Tips for Online Language Trainers. And she's got her language training offer, which is for language learners. But she's still pushing out content on her blog to help other language trainers learn from what she's doing, because she's doing a lot of Skype training. And so that's great. And there are actually a lot of trainers out there who are doing something similar. And so you see online, in the online community, there are still people who are putting out content. And, you know, like everybody says, when if you come back to me and say, hey, you know, you find this great Skype guide, how can I find a guide on, I don't know, what's the best LMS to use, or what's the best content website or something like that? Honestly, Google today, and even in language training, Google, you just ask the question to Google and Google will give you the answer. That's how I found Lindsay Williams. That's how you can find the guide on the best LMS or whatever it is that you want. Get on Google and get searching. That's, you know, top recommendation. You don't need to go asking colleagues or experts for their, you know, it'll be much faster just to get on Google and just to do it that way. So there's that. There's other things out there. Now, I actually wrote something a year or so ago on digitally assisted language training. This is an approach to teaching online that I developed based on what I was doing at that time teaching online, what I had just been doing coming out of my language training school that I was working for in Paris. And I wanted to write a short ebook, it's like 20 odd pages long, on why I do my digital training the way that I do and why it's different to other mainstream methods of digital training, but similar in a way. And actually, you know, I created my own name for it. So digitally assisted language training, you know, I say it's not blended, it's not e-learning, it's something different. Actually, it's like what I said, what I have been saying all along. A good expert language trainer is defining their approach through cherry picking from other approaches that they've seen that they like, but never subscribing to one particular approach. So I don't subscribe to blended learning or e-learning or whatever, but I use parts of them in the things that I do. And I call that digitally assisted language training. Now, of course, that's kind of, you know, a bit of a paradox, because now I'm telling you to subscribe to that method of language training. I'm not telling you to do that. Don't go and say, I'm not a digitally assisted language trainer. It's really just a kind of catch-all for lots of different ideas and to make it sort of general tenets of what we should be doing to make online training successful. Because the thing you have to understand, if I'm trying to help you today to do online training, the first thing you have to understand about online training is it's gonna be boring in a certain way. Because it's what I've said before. What did I say in the last episodes? When you're in the classroom with the learner, the reason that the learner is enjoying it is probably more because they're there with you, or they're there with other colleagues in their class. Like if you've got a group situation, then it's because they're there with other people, maybe their friends or people they work with, or fellow students or something like that. And that's what makes it fun. The actual language training part of it is not fun. And nobody says, oh yeah, I'm gonna learn some English today, woohoo. It's more, oh, I'm gonna learn some English today with my teacher or with my colleagues or whatever. I'm gonna go and speak English with somebody, and that's the fun part. So when you look at doing online language training, because we're coming from the teacher's perspective, we are so convinced, because of the mentality that we're in, we're so convinced, I'm gonna design these really cool materials for these guys and they're gonna really enjoy it. I'm gonna send it to them and they'll see, they'll just be like, whoa, this is so cool, it's so well designed, I'm learning so much. We think that because we're trainers and that's something that matters to us, right? We think that, you know, that's our job, is to make the training content interesting that we're doing. But the learners themselves, that's not gonna make them excited, that's not gonna motivate them just because it's well designed, right? So they're gonna receive your super duper content and they're gonna see it as work, because that's what it is. If you only have the work part and you take out the socializing part, the fun part, all you're left with is the boring work part. So, you know, just get that through your head to begin with, that what we're doing is gonna be fundamentally boring, unless we have some sort of part in there where they have pseudo contact with the teacher or full contact with the teacher. I don't know, whatever you want to do, but you know, I suggest a bit of everything in the book for digitally assisted language training. But one of the tenets is you have to have the trainer in there somewhere or colleagues in there somewhere. There's a reason why social learning, as they call it, is so popular, because when there's other people involved, it brings the fun part back into it. So you've got the work part, which is boring, but masking that is the fun part of talking with other people. So what I'm trying to say is, in conclusion, things like, you know, if you say, oh, I do e-learning, but then you do something that's boring and that probably doesn't work. because you're sending your learners something. You're subscribing to one method, which is designing these really great materials using gamification. Yeah, so I'm going to use points, and they're going to get points when they answer this. And then if they get enough points, they'll get a badge. And oh, they're going to be so excited about getting their badge. No, they won't, because that's what, for example, Duolingo does, or Memrise, or something like that. And they're fine, but try to find anybody who says, yeah, I've been using Duolingo for like about 2 years and it really works. Like, it's just, sorry, you know, I'm being a bit rude, but that just doesn't exist. People use Duolingo for a week, maybe a couple of months at best, and they say, yeah, I learned a bit of vocabulary, it was cool, but then I got, you know, bored of it, or I just stopped using it, or I didn't have time for it anymore. And it's because you naturally just can't keep the motivation up on your own. You know, if you're just solo required to keep the motivation going for your learning, then eventually it's going to click that actually this is kind of boring and I don't want to do it anymore. So, you know, I know that, you know that. If you think about yourself not as a trainer but as a language learner, when I think of myself as a language learner, straight away I'm like, oh yeah, it's true, I did that German thing, I tried to learn German, it was boring and I stopped. You know, if you really are honest with yourself, you know that pure e-learning, we've all done it to try to learn something, and more often than not it's boring. Now, in saying that, there's one e-learning quote-unquote thing that I did once that I really, really got into, and I did it over and over again. Like, I've watched these, it's 7 hours worth of videos. 7 hours worth of videos. No quizzes, no gamification, no social learning, no whatever the hell, digitally assisted language training, no blended, nothing. Just 7 hours of it, one dude standing at the front of an audience and talking, quite still, not moving around, not wearing a clown mask, not doing a dance, in front of a presentation on a projector, 7 hours. So the pitch that I'm giving you right now, you should be like, no way you did that, that's ridiculous, that's boring. I watched this dude probably about 4 or 5 times. 4 or 5 times, 7 hours of my life gone watching this dude stand. It's not the most exciting dude in the world. You know, he's got a little bit of a boring voice, like me. I know that I accept my faults. You gotta live up to it, you know. But I swear to you, this guy, his name is Ash Moira. I'll put a link to him in the description. This is not for you to go and have a look at unless you're interested in this. He's one of the pioneers or thought leaders on a business methodology called Lean Startup. And Lean Startup is, if you have a business idea, a product idea, it's all about taking it from zero money, zero investment, just testing with a small handful of early customers the idea that you have, and testing the reaction that people have to it from, like, even just the concept, and then building it based on what they say and building it little by little. That's how I made my learning platform that I promote on LinkedIn. You've probably seen me talking about LearnBook. I built that through that. You know, it started off with just me talking to one trainer and just saying, what do you want in an online learning platform? Just, you know, give me the rundown. Just had a chat, went away, built something really basic, came back and said, right, is this what you were looking for? Saw what she was doing with it. She tried it out. She couldn't use it. It was too complicated. It was too whatever. And then it just went away and made changes, came back to her. And we went over and over and over this for, like, I don't know, 6 months to a year until I had something that I was like, this is good. And at the end, when I had something, after all of these cycles of learning, I had something where even I was like, this is cool. I'm going to use this myself. So that's, you know, I'm really happy with the thing that I've built today. And that's because of this guy. So this guy did a Udemy course. It's not even available anymore. He's got some new thing now. I still have it on my Udemy. So if you want it, get in touch with me and, you know, maybe I can find a way to get it to you, get you access to it. But it's not there anymore. It was just 7 hours of videos split into different sections where he explains all the principles of his lean startup approach of how to get a product started and how to bring it to market and get the price right and all that kind of stuff. And it's just so, he explains it so well, and it was so applicable to my situation that I knew deep inside, if I can take a little bit of this dude's magic, I'm going to make something great. And so I was determined to get a part of that magic. I watched it again and again and again, just trying to, like, suck in all the, you know, all the hidden messages, everything he's saying. If you just do this one thing, it will work. Trying to find all those points. And just, you know, even write down, I wrote notes and everything. I had, you know, really, really went. And I went, you know, I watched it a couple of times, went back to it 6 months later, went back to it 6 months after that. You know, watched it again, you know, watched it while I was, listened to it while I was mowing the grass and, the, you know, doing the dishes or whatever, just kept listening and listening and listening. And it was just this intense internal motivation. Now, that's the only time I think I've ever had that in my life, in terms of like doing e-learning, doing some sort of self-guided learning. Maybe with the Delta, no, sorry, that's true. With the Delta, I was so internally motivated by that because I saw from the very first new methodology that I read, I was going into my classroom and applying it and getting this great reaction from learners. So that gave me this intense motivation to go back and find more and to test more things. And so the whole way through the Delta, I was totally dedicated to it, reading all the books that I possibly could. You know, if you go back to the podcast episode about my 5 book recommendations, those are books that I read cover to cover just because I was so intensely motivated to get those methods into my classroom and actually experiment with them and see happy faces of my learners. There's something that's just inherently motivating. So that exists, implicit, as you call it, motivation. Intrinsic motivation versus extrinsic motivation. So if you're thinking of this as basically intrinsic would be you've got a real basic core need that you want to get, that's getting satisfied by what you're doing. And so your body is pushing you to do it. You know, you have this kind of primal drive to do something. I'm sure you've all felt that about something before. Versus the other end of the spectrum, if you think of it as a spectrum, extrinsic motivation, which is you're a kid in school, you hate maths, but your parents are like beating you, telling you, you better be good at maths or you're going to be in trouble. That's pure extrinsic motivation. There's no, you know, okay, maybe if they're beating you, there's some sort of internal thing, like I don't want to get beaten. Okay, take away that example. That's a bit weird. If they're, you know, your parents are telling you, you know what, if you get your math stuff in order, then I don't know, you know, they'll not be disappointed in you or something like that. I mean, okay, even then, it's difficult to find something that's purely extrinsic. I'm giving examples here, and I'm actually thinking, well, no, then you're partially intrinsically motivated by the want to please your parents, which is kind of a basic want as well inside. So that's why to think of it as a spectrum, because you're never really going to push fully to the extrinsic end, and you may never really be at the intrinsic end, unless, like I said in a previous episode, somebody's put a gun to your head and said, you better learn this word or else, and you would think, all right, this is really intrinsic, because I really don't want to die, and that's a pretty basic need. So think of it as a spectrum. So when you're sitting in a classroom, that's, you know, you've got pulling you towards the intrinsic end of the spectrum of motivation is, oh, I really like sitting with my teacher, they're really funny and I like chatting to them. But also pulling you towards the extrinsic end is, I really need to learn English for my job, but it's boring, but I really have to. You know, that you're somewhere sitting in the middle of that spectrum, balancing, doing your balancing act, trying not to get bored. But if the teacher is not good, for example, if the teacher is boring, or the teacher is being too scholarly and too grammar focused, that's going to push them towards the extrinsic end. And then you very quickly see learners just drop off, their motivation drops off, they stop showing up. You know, so you can see how this actually has an impact on whether they come or not. Why am I saying all that? Because for the online work, you're quite far in the extrinsic end, because it's like, oh, I received an email from my teacher and he says I should do this homework because it'll help me improve my English. All right, I guess that's important. You're finding it difficult to find the intrinsic motivation. And I know when I was learning German or French, even though I was living in the country in France, even though my family-in-law were German and they didn't speak any English and I had to go and like spend 2 weeks in their house, you know, you think, that should give you some intrinsic motivation, Richard. No, it didn't. I really didn't. I didn't have very much at all. I was much more, you know, I'm thinking like, yeah, I could do German, but I could also watch TV. And I'm much more intrinsically motivated to watch TV or to go on Netflix or whatever. So, you know, that's pulling my language learning motivation way down towards the extrinsic. And you know, I didn't have that much internally wanting to learn German or French, which is weird, but that's just the way it was. So you're starting off with a bad base when you're doing digital training, is what I'm trying to tell you. You need to really think carefully about what you're doing and how you're doing it, and to put yourself in the learner's shoes. We talk about empathy all the time in this podcast for whatever reason. I guess it's just because it's important. If you put yourself in the learner's shoes and you think about, is the learner really going to find this interesting? And why? And put yourself, you know, in the position of a learner, not in the position of a teacher thinking, oh, I've really well designed this activity. No, in the position of a learner who's saying, I could be, you know, I don't know, going to the gym, or I could be watching TV, or I could be spending time with my children or my loved one, but no, I'm going to do language training instead because it's important. You know, how do you make them feel like that, that is important? How does that work? So just sending them cool stuff, sending them a super cool video with a really interesting subject. No, that's not enough. And maybe for some of your learners it is, but I know for mine, you know, rather extensive experience of trying to do that, most of the time it's not enough. You'll find people who are the exception, obviously, but most general people, it's not enough for them. So yeah, this document that I wrote was a lot about that, was a lot about, okay, you're starting off with low motivation, how can you improve it? So the first thing, like I said, was putting the trainer in, and that's what I was saying in previous episodes, was start getting used to the idea of recording yourself, start getting used to the idea of making YouTube videos out of your own content, out of your own interactions, speaking with a colleague, or just talking on your own about the subject that you're trying to get them to do. Because if you put yourself in there, it brings a little bit of intrinsic motivation into it because they want to see you and hear what you have to say. And if it's a video specifically made for them, and even if not, it's still something very motivating. So it's the first really important point is to think about how can I put myself into this activity? How can I include myself and motivate this learner through my presence and my interaction? How can I do that? Is number one. The other thing that's really, really important with this sending online activities that I really try to push when I'm talking to trainers about how to do it best is, have you actually thought about the planning, have you thought about the structure of what you're sending? It's not enough to just say, I've recorded a video of myself talking about this TED talk, and I'm sending you the video, can you please give me your opinion on it? That's not really a pedagogic activity. So whether that might motivate them, that might be motivating, but there's, for me, a part of motivation is also seeing the sense in doing something. You know, we're not fully masking the idea that this is work. So because it's work, it should have some sort of end goal, objective. It should have some sort of point to it that you can see as a learner. Even as a learner, you can see what the point of doing this thing is. And so if you stick to what is usual to you in the classroom, which is this pedagogic lesson planning, I give the example of test, teach, test. It's just the easiest possible framework to use. You know, every teacher who's done a qualification in language teaching knows this. Test, teach, test is based on the idea that there's evidence that shows if you, as a learner of something, if you're exposed to what you don't know initially and you feel that feeling of, oh, I don't know that, and then the teacher gives you that information and then tests you again on the same information, you'll acquire it better and with a higher rate of success than if you just are entering the classroom, you get the information, and then you get tested on it. The theory is when you test somebody first and show them what they don't know, it triggers a process in the brain when the brain says, there's something I don't know. Oh, I have a gap in my knowledge. We call it knowledge gaps. And so we're filling those knowledge gaps. That's more effective than just saying, oh, there's some new knowledge. That's interesting. And there's the gaps. Oh, I know how to fill that because I have that knowledge. So that would just be teach, test. Test, teach, test is the method that we use to open the brain up to receiving that information and retaining that information. So if you're going to send somebody something online, try to think about if you could make a test, teach, test. Try to think about if there's actually a pedagogic objective to what you're doing. So you're sending the TED video, give me your opinion. Well, that's just the first part. That's just getting them thinking about it. Then you need to test them. Well, what actually is the point of watching this video? Are they going to learn some new vocabulary? Are they going to learn a grammar point? Are they going to practice something like present continuous? There's a lot of examples of present continuous in this video because the theme is, you know, somebody's project that they're doing at the moment or something like that. Then give them some sentences at the beginning like, okay, you know, what is this? Questions, for example. You watch this video, what is this person's project? What are they doing? Why are they doing it? Who are they doing it with? And then you'll get those answers coming out where they'll say, you know, the learner says, he does it at the moment with, they don't know how to say he's trying, or they can't form it naturally saying he's trying. And they've watched the video, and so they've got open to that idea that that's possible, that that's something missing there. And then you hit them with, all right, now we're going to look at the examples from the video where they use the present continuous, where there's sentences with ing in it. So look at this. He said, he's trying to, you know, I'm trying to get this project off the ground. Oh, well, there's I'm trying to focus on that. Why did he say that? Give them the explanation. And then test, there should be another part of that activity where it's, okay, now tell me about a project you're doing at the moment. What's happening with it? Who are you doing it with? How long is it, etc. So it's really quite, you know, when you put it out like that, it seems so logical. You're like, oh yeah, so the video has examples. We get them to implicitly look at those examples without explaining that it's present continuous. And then we show them the actual examples from the video properly put out in with the proper grammar and explain why it's like that. And that'll make them go, oh, right, okay, I didn't know that. And then give them another activity where they have to replicate, you know, they have to generalize what they've just learned, as we do when we learn a language as kids. You know, you get information and you generalize that to other examples, so your own personal examples, and try to do the ing with that. And then the teacher comes in at the end and says, aha, so you did do it right most of the cases, but this one and this one were not right because, and they say, ah, right, I see when I tried it myself, I didn't get it right because, and you know, then they're going to go away from that having really learned something. So that seems like a lot of effort to go to for a homework. But you know, when I explain it like that, it makes a hell of a lot more sense than just sending that video and saying, what's your opinion? Then it means everything you do, maybe you did present continuous in your class and you're just revising it. Or maybe you're going to cover present continuous in your next face-to-face lesson. There can be a reason for it too. And there is a great example of where I'm cherry picking a concept from blended learning. Blended learning is, if I do something online, then it should be brought into my next face-to-face lesson. Or if I do something in a face-to-face lesson, that should be the basis for what I'm doing online. That's blended, when it's integrated with the face-to-face part of your training. So I can cherry pick that and put it into my method, my approach, and that's fine. That's what we should be doing. We should be taking the best parts from other approaches, because that part of blended works. It's great to do that. It makes a lot of sense. It gives the learner a purpose for what they're doing. It really does increase their motivation. So think about that. Even if you think it seems like a bit overkill, it's not. It really gives a purpose to what's happening, the purpose to what you're sending the learner. So they're motivated by the fact that you're in the lesson, giving your opinion or introducing the subject. Maybe at the end, when you ask them to do the, tell me about your own current project, I've done an example to model it, and you record yourself, a video of yourself saying, hey, you know, at the moment I'm producing a guide on digital learning, and I'm giving that guide to other trainers, and I'm producing podcasts and whatever. You know, give some examples and even write the sentences out or whatever, depending on what level the learner is. I mean, you're in control then. Think about it this way. You're in control of the level of content that they're receiving. There's nothing I hate more than trying to find content for a lesson that I'm doing by going on YouTube. Because you're searching through videos, and it's for a beginner learner or somebody with a low level, and you just can't find anything that's appropriate, or the things that are appropriate are really dumb and weird, and you just think, no, I can't possibly send that to them, it's really weird, I can't make that interesting, you know? If you're recording your own examples to the activities, then all you need is that one TED video or something to form the basis of, a few sentence examples, and the rest of the stuff, the introduction and the practice part at the end, is your recording, so you level the language to suit that learner's level. And so that, you know, you really get the control that you need to make that learner not have a panic attack because they're listening to something that's way above their level. Yes, it's also not good for them. You know, real materials are good, and Realia is a good way to construct your lessons, but you can't have that all the time. You know, they need to have something that's just above their level. That's the whole idea of trying to push somebody to improve, is to give them content and expose them to things that are just one step above their level. It's really, you know from experience that that's something that works, right? I don't need to quote Stephen Krashen and his whole methodology, just believe it. So it's even if it seems like overkill, it makes a lot of sense. So it made a lot of sense to me. I put it in practice and I saw that I got more motivation. I got way more response rate for my homeworks. It really worked. And so, you know, there's nothing, there shouldn't be anything more to say. Go out there and try it for yourself. And if it doesn't work, come back to me and talk to me about it. And we'll find out why, and we'll talk about your particular context, your particular teaching situation, and what went wrong that meant that they weren't motivated to do that homework, you know. It's easily something you can also get wrong, where you can do too much text, or you can do too little text, or you can do too many videos, or whatever, you know, too much content, it freaks them out, and they run away from it, you know. So that's the third point in the text, if you look at it, is support. It's not a very long point, but it's something to always keep in mind, is I need to support my learners in this because I'm not there. So I need to have some sort of system in place where if they are freaked out, if they are feeling like running away and I don't want to do this anymore, I can't use this platform, it's too complicated, or I'm not used to this Padlet thing or Quizlet, and you know, I'm a bit freaked out by it, so I'm not going to do it. When you're not there, people will just have that thought and they'll not even tell you about it. And you'll just not get the homework back. You'll not get the digital part of your lesson back. They'll not send it to you. And the next time you're in face-to-face, you'll say, hey, what about that homework? And they'll be like, oh yeah, no, I didn't really understand, or I didn't really get the platform. And you'll be like, why didn't you tell me? They're like, oh, I didn't want to bother you. No, I was really busy. So you need to have some sort of system in place to like check in between face-to-face lessons. Are they really doing what they're saying they're going to do? Do they need help? Can they log in? Have they forgot their password? Have they just forgotten about the activity, full stop? Do they not understand something? Is the language too difficult? Do you need to translate something for them? You know, have that system in place where there's some sort of, you know, I saw a really good example the other day of a teacher doing that, where every time they set a homework activity, they would, in their calendar, put the next face-to-face lesson, and in between the two dates would put just a wee 15-minute reminder, you know, check Mr. Dupont's work lesson 2.1 or something like that. And so that would buzz them in a few days to go and check if he's done it yet or not, and then send Mr. Dupont an email and say, hey, do you actually need help? Or send them a WhatsApp message. If you have a WhatsApp group, that would be great. Send them a WhatsApp message, or you know, whatever way you want to do it. You can even phone them just for 5 minutes, just phone like, hey, what's up? Do you need help? And they'll tell you, yeah, actually, no, I really didn't get it. I don't have enough time. And you say, right, okay, well, can we maybe try to figure out when you would have time? Could you book it in? Can you put it in your calendar? Like, that's what I do, you know. Empathy, try to put yourself in their shoes, share your story with them, tell them, yeah, you know, I tried to do e-learning before and it was really tough, but what really worked for me was putting in a block in my calendar, 30 minutes at lunch one day, so I really forced myself to go and do it, and that really worked for me. You know, support them, empathy, systems in place to help them, and that can really work. So I'm going to put a link to the document in the podcast, but I think, you know, if you've listened to me, you've got the fundamentals of what you actually need to do to get your online training going better. So go out and try it. And if you do want to start a discussion on digitally assisted language training, #DALT, #DALT, do it. And I would be really happy. You know, I'm not out there for fame or anything. I'm out there just to get people talking. And I would love it if people came to me and asked me questions about it. That's what I want, you know, and I would love to be able to help you with that. So get out there and try it and see how it goes. Get your feedback. Come to me with the feedback. Tell me if it's good. Tell me if it's bad. I want to hear about it all. I really hope that you benefit from that, and I really hope that you appreciate that the reason I'm telling you this is because the future of training is going to be partially digital. That's something that we can talk about in another episode, but look on LinkedIn, look on Instagram, look on YouTube. There's so much going on there in terms of language training. So many free materials going on there, free live things, people putting themselves out live and doing live lessons and stuff like that. You know, it would be foolish to not try to jump on the bandwagon now when it's in its infancy, to waiting until later when it's really developed and the market's totally flooded and you're just getting started and you're just not going to get any followers, you're not going to get any business from that. You know, you're going to, maybe the market of local face-to-face language training is going to shrink. We know that it's already shrinking. And you're going to be pushed to doing more stuff online. Get into it now. If you need help setting up a website or anything like that, you know, if you want to copy somebody else who's doing that online offer, you know, I've got this thing with these videos and you can pay this much and then you get access to it. If you don't know how to do that, Google it, first of all. If you don't get the answer you're looking for on Google, which I'd be very surprised by, just send me a message, let me know, and I'll see. Maybe we'll do a podcast episode about how to set up your own website or something like that. So just get out there and get started. Because if you don't, it will be too late. It's going that way. You have to believe me. And don't get started when it's too late. Don't get started when the market's completely saturated. Get out and get started now and get practicing. And thanks for listening. Hope to see you next time. Thanks for checking out this podcast. And if you want to know more, please follow me on LinkedIn, on Instagram, on Facebook, on YouTube. All the links are in the description. I really look forward to seeing you in the next episode.